Good morning. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Today is Wednesday, July 8th, 2009, and this is our 9:30 session. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Adams?
We're glad you're all here. We have five people signed up for communications. Carla, can you please read the title for communications item 923?
Request of Brianna Hinoja to address council regarding school budget cuts.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here.
Hello.
You just have to give us your first and last name. Please have a seat. And that clock on that big hunk of wood in front of you will help you count down 3 minutes.
Okay. Hello, my name is Brianna Hinojosa. I will be a senior at Gresham High School. Obviously, it's a big, everyone knows the issue of schools and the loss of funding that currently our state is going through and I think is growing as a nation. I think that we can start to help school funding at more of a city level, community level. And I feel that if we bring awareness such as, like, say, a fundraiser at the waterfront, something like that. It helped build bonding of a community and also school funding. I feel that going to Gresham right now, we have a loss of we're not getting hit hard, which is lucky, but we are experiencing some negative effects from the budget cuts. Like, for instance, when our teachers grade papers, they can't print the papers out and correct them. Now we have to sort of really rely on technology and use, go online and look up our grades and things like that. I feel like it makes it harder for students, let alone the homework, but also we have to worry about how to communicate. See our grades, where our area we can work in, and I feel like it shouldn't have to be like that. Also, school activities. I know that partly the responsibility is for the school to build fundraising for that, but if we had the back of the city and the communities, I think that we'd have a better turnout. And I just hope that we have more support, and maybe next time I can talk about more ideas. But I just wanted to put that on the table and be an advocate for the student body and really let you guys know that we care, and it's our future that is relying on this, and it shouldn't be in jeopardy. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate your passion. Can you please read the title for communications item 924?
Request of Dylan Amo to address council regarding the escalating unsafe public traffic conditions along the River Place Esplanade.
Mr. Amo? Amo? All right. Could you please read the communications item 925?
Request of Ron Swearin to address council regarding Columbia River Crossing and Freeway Loop.
Good morning, Mr. Swearin. How are you? We'll get those handed out. I think you're probably familiar with our protocols.
Yes, I am.
Glad you're here.
Ron Swearin. I live in Portland. I've participated a lot in discussions regarding the Columbia River crossing, but I would also like to bring up another subject that I think is directly related. It's called the freeway loop. And there was a freeway loop study. Mr. Adams participated in it. Matt Garrett from ODOT, Rex Burkholder participated in that. But first, I'm with a group that's proposing something different than the Columbia River Crossing. This is the Columbia River Crossing as probably most recently envisioned or a reasonable facsimile. And we're proposing a bridge in the rail corridor that would actually go towards the West Union area. Eventually a route that would go that way. Anyway, I know that it's been concluded it's rather difficult to raise money for the CRC project, as the costs approach $4 billion. That could lessen because construction costs have come down, but that's probably a good ballpark figure. So I'd like to ask, how much harder would it be to find money to complete the freeway loop? And for those that participated in it or have read it, this study says that more traffic to I-5 in downtown Portland will necessitate a major reconstruction project. And one of the main recommendations was a removal project, relocating I-5, that in 2003 dollars was estimated at $3 to $6 billion. So if this was not done until, let's say, 2015, what would the cost be? So I would think with both the CRC and the freeway loop that the cost could be around $20 billion. So once we start down the road of rebuilding the CRC, then this really becomes kind of a critical. And I think this should have been disclosed to the task force and the sponsors council. Do we really need a $20 billion project? So what I'm suggesting, I know people would like to see the waterfront on the east side reclaimed, but as I pass out to you and I'll show to the crowd here, there have been other efforts in other cities to build things over freeways. This is a photo of a freeway park in Seattle where the convention center is. It was built over the freeway. I also passed to the council some photographs of I-696 in Detroit where there were two plazas built over the freeway. So this would be another way of reclaiming the waterfront without embarking on a project that would probably be at least $10 billion, maybe $15 billion, in addition to the $4 billion of the CRC. So, like I say, we recommend another route that goes out to Washington County.
Thank you, Mr. Swearin. Appreciate your testimony. Could you please read the title for communications item 926?
Request of Hector Laura Cervantes to address council regarding unauthorized demonstration and experiments on innocent citizens.
Mr. Cervantes, welcome. How are you? You just have to give us your first and last name, and that clock on the hunk of wood will help you count down your 3 minutes.
My name is Hector Laura Cervantes. I'm here today, this is about the third time I've been here, regarding the illegal experiments and operations that have been going on here in the city of Portland. The main concern here is the children of the city of Portland. They've been actually, I feel that they've been used for illegal experiments and implantation of devices, which it sounds kind of bizarre, but for the fact is I've been in contact with the Sacramento, and they're actually investigating a lot of their cities because of this. And my main concern is basically that it's going on here in the city of Portland. And I've been to a lot of their demonstrations and found out, well, some of their demonstrations. But the thing that I found out was that law enforcement was also using a technology, which is a federal crime, to be doing that, according to the Justice Department in Washington, D.C. Not only that, but the... not only that, but the matter is that there's a group of Hispanic people that came down here from California, and they're in the biotechnology and implantation of devices that been actually committing heinous crimes against the people of the city of Portland and the people of the state of Oregon. And you know, I was going to bring in some legal documentation stating the fact, and also stating the fact that they're also investigating in the cities of in California. So my main concern is the citizens and the children of the city of Portland being used for illegal operations and implantation of these devices, which I'd like to send the city council with more legal documentation so they could look at this. I also like to start a committee regarding this matter to investigate this illegal operation, and also ask the city council for backing up in the Hammond Committee. I did the same thing in California, which became very successful in doing this. But it was in a different matter. But anyway, I'd like to thank you for your time. And like I said, I'd like to send some legal documentation to you folks so you could take a look at it and maybe give me some feedback on that.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Cervantes.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Carla, could you please read communications item 927?
Request of Ron Tucker to address council regarding Cascadia Behavioral Health Care.
Mr. Tucker? Mr. Tucker. All right. Mr. Tucker is not in the room presently, so that gets us to the communication. Consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull an item from the consent agenda? Hearing none, Carla, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. That gets us to the 9:30 time certain. Can you please read the title for council calendar item 928?
Connecting Green Alliance's new name for our regional park system, the Intertwine.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to welcome Metro President David Bragdon to council this morning. And David is going to introduce the new name for our regional system of parks, trails, and natural areas. As Metro President, David has been committed to promoting sustainable systems that keep our communities connected, healthy, and green. Portland has become a model for integrating these kinds of values into our regional planning and environmental management, and Metro has played a lead role in this movement. We are continuing to strengthen these partnerships across agencies, sectors, and jurisdictions to reach our goal of a truly world-class system of regional parks, trails, and natural areas. Making this vision for our region a reality is the work of the Connecting Green Alliance, a group of nonprofits, state and local agencies, businesses, and citizens from across the region working to plan, develop, and promote Connecting Green. Many of these partners gathered last week for the unveiling of the new name for our regional park system. Senator Merkley attended the celebration and was so enthusiastic that he asked David to testify in front of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee in D.C. David will be one of three local officials from across the nation providing testimony on July 14th, and it's expected to tell the Portland region's story about how good transportation, planning, and urban parks figure into the climate change bill being debated in Congress. At this time, I'd like to thank David Bragdon for leading the Connecting Green Alliance and for being here today to talk about how together we are improving our regional system of parks, trails, and natural areas. David, welcome.
Thank you. President. Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fish, thank you. I'm joined by Merrill Reddish, who's the executive director of the Audubon Society and is one of the stalwarts of the Connecting Green Alliance, which consists of members across the region who've come together on this issue. We also hope to be joined this morning, I believe, by Geoff Roach from the Trust for Public Land, but he's not here. We've been working with Commissioner Fish, as he mentioned, with regard to parks issues, but this is really an organizing principle that applies to a lot of the work that the rest of you do as well. We've been working closely with Mayor Adams on the bicycle agenda and trails agenda with regard to the National Bike Summit last February, where we were able to make a joint approach to the Rails to Trails Conservancy and have a joint proposal there. We've been working with Commissioner Leonard as well with regard to the Water Bureau's interest around Dodge Park and relationships with the Forest Service there. And I think in the future, I'm sure we'll work with Commissioner Fritz, her interest in rivers, Commissioner Saltzman, Greta Green. We've been working on acquisitions, for example, in Johnson Creek with Bureau of Environmental Services. So really, Connecting Green is not an institution or an agency. It's just a way of doing things. It's an organizing principle that we can use to approach a lot of different problems and challenges. There's a couple of premises that we started with. One is that this region has some tremendous assets, and the city of Portland is the owner and proud operator of many of those. A lot of them are, of course, natural assets. We've got five great rivers, any one of which would be the envy of any other metropolitan area, the Sandy River, the Clackamas River, Tualatin, of course, the Willamette and the Columbia. We have hillsides. We have forests. We have national forests not very far away. We have dormant volcanoes. We've got all sorts of things that nature has given us. We've also inherited a lot of great natural assets from future generations, the Olmsted Parks, particularly here in Portland Peninsula Park, Laurelhurst Park, Selwood Park. So we've inherited a lot of great stuff. Another of our premises, though, is that the test of a society isn't kind of what you lucked into or what you got to inherit from somebody else, but it's what you're doing with it and how are you working together to make it better for future generations. And on that, we're pretty lucky as well. We've got a lot of people doing great work in this region, a lot of great agencies who are working to, on parks and natural areas. We've got a lot of great friends groups and nonprofits who are working together. We also have an industry here, whether it's the bicycle industry or whether it's the outdoor recreation industry, companies like Keen Footwear and Adidas who make their living off the outdoors. So a lot of great assets that we have here, committed citizens, committed companies, committed governments. What we've been lacking really is a way for us all to work together and to make all the sum of these great parts add up to more than just the sum of those parts and to present a united front to parks users and potential funders, whether they're taxpayers or other levels of government. We've also been lacking a way to kind of share efficiencies and work together. Because really, all these great parts that we have in this region really aren't adding up to what they could if we worked together a little bit better. We have a very fragmented system right now. The user who wakes up on Saturday morning and wants to go for a hike or wants to go for a birding trip, there's no single source of information, whether you're coming from out of town or whether you live here, about all the different facilities. We have great plans that aren't being realized. We have a plan for 900 miles of trails and less than 200 of them built. And part of that's just an interjurisdictional issue of the fragmentation of the system. Over half the publicly owned land, and this is tens of thousands of acres in our region, over half the publicly owned forested land in our region is threatened by invasive species. And there's a mismatch often between the agencies that have money for restoration and the agencies that have money for capital acquisition. And so we need a means of getting them together. There's a quarter of this region, particularly unincorporated areas, where there isn't a provider of parks at all. In the city of Portland, which provides a higher level of service, bears the brunt of that. You pay 100% of the cost for operating Forest Park, but 40% of the users are coming from outside the city limits. So there's some inequities there. And 2 in 5 people in the region don't live within walking distance of a park, which seems just plain wrong in a region like ours. We have 45% of the state's population here, yet the state parks have very little activity and very few expenditures in our region. And despite the fact that we're surrounded by federal lands, the federal government is not a very active participant in our parks and recreation area, mostly because we've just never asked. And as Mayor Adams knows, we've done a great job of mobilizing a federal agenda with regard to transportation. Our premise is we need to be doing the same with regard to natural resources. So to take advantage of all of these opportunities that we see and work together better, we've put together this new alliance. Now, it's not a new agency. It's not a new organization. There's plenty of organizations and agencies that are already doing great stuff. Really, this Connecting Green Alliance has been a way of working together better with each other and to do our work better. So that's what the Intertwine is. And it's an alliance that gives us shared identity to all the different constituent parts here, whether they're government agencies or nonprofits, gives a means for the nonprofits and foundations and companies to come together to work in support of natural resources. Intertwine is also a place, and it's a set of experiences. It's a place that we can map and describe to visitors as well as to ourselves on the web or on maps. Travel Portland has been another of our great partners in this. We went to them with this idea a couple of years ago, and they said, boy, this fits exactly with what we're trying to tell outsiders about the Portland area. And one of the great things about Portland is that the thing that we're selling to outsiders, to visitors, the things that we're telling them are the things that we tell ourselves, the things that visitors love about Portland are the things that we love about Portland. And so we worked with them and hired Sockeye Creative, a great local company based down in Union Station, to work with Travel Portland to come up with this logo and to link it ultimately on the web with Travel Portland's Go See Portland. such that the experiences that one can have in the outdoors will soon be linked in cyberspace to the experiences one can have in our business establishments. We've got a couple of other great new partners on this. Kaiser Permanente has funded a Walk There book. They understand that if their patients, young or old, get out in natural areas and spend less time on the couch or in front of the computer, they're going to have a healthier client base. And then finally, Keen Footwear, which 6 years ago had zero employees and was a gleam in somebody's eye and now has 60 employees in Northwest Portland designing and marketing and selling footwear all around the world. Keen Footwear has also been a great partner in this. Now, other places are ahead of us. Other places are doing this around the country. The St. Louis area got seven different counties together, urban, suburban, all of them working together to brand their system as the Great Rivers Greenway, so that regardless of where you are in the St. Louis region, you know where you are relative to the Missouri and the Mississippi River, and a lot of different jurisdictions working together there. Chicago Wilderness, despite being hundreds of miles from the nearest national forest, has put together a group called Chicago Wilderness and become a magnet for U.S. Forest Service conservation fund, urban conservation funds. Again, the sort of thing we need to be asking for and that Senator Merkley has already been supportive of. So other places with far fewer natural assets than we have are already doing it, and that's what we want to be doing. Next up, we're going to be working on some signature projects connecting Portland, for example, with Mount Hood through Clackamas County, and Chair Lynn Peterson there has been very supportive of this. City of Sandy's been very supportive. We've been working with Commissioner Leonard in that with regard to Dodge Park and the Mount Hood National Forest and the Water Bureau's property up there. We'll be working on the signage issues and mapping issues so that the user has better access, whether they're coming here from Pittsburgh or whether they live right here in Portland. We'll be putting together a federal and state agenda, recognizing U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Forest Service, Corps of Engineers, Bonneville Power Administration. All of them have funding streams that ought to be serving the urban area, and we need to ask, and we need to participate in those. We've been working with PDOT on the active transportation agenda with regard to the transportation bill coming out of the federal government over the next 18 months. The ODS company, Jonathan Nicholas, has been a leader with us on that. Obviously, along with Mayor Adams. And then the next big event, September 18th, and this is in conjunction with Kimpton Hotels, who own the Monaco Hotel and the Vintage Plaza here and the Trust for Public Land, will be sponsoring something called Parking Day, in which parking spaces around the country are taken over for a day and small parks are built in those to promote the use of natural areas in urban areas. So those are the next things we have coming up. We look forward to your participation in all of those fun events and the lobbying and the work we have ahead. It's all a matter of kind of taking our natural assets from this area and from future generations and the great human assets that we have, people like Merrill and organizations like Audubon, and converting those into an organizational model that really works to get things done. So we appreciate the chance to update you on that, and happy to take any questions or ideas that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. President. Questions or comments? Well, I just want to say thank you for your leadership in this area and your great partnership with our great Parks Commissioner. And you know, we don't have often the opportunity to say it, but in my work on transportation and funding for streetcars and all the planning and everything that goes into that, I want to thank you for today. We're buying six streetcars, and that's helping to jumpstart a brand new industry here. And that wouldn't happen without the support and the work of your institution, but specifically your leadership. So thank you.
Thank you. And I'll be back in front of you, I think, July 23rd. We have an agreement with regard to management of some lands that we've just purchased, and we have a good partnership with various agencies of the city government.
David, if I could just close by saying, you know, we often talk about a regional perspective, but it's a term that is an aspiration but often doesn't have content. And I think Intertwine is an example of what a true regional vision is around our parks, trails, and natural areas. And grateful for your leadership and all of our nonprofit partners and our other governmental entities. And just as an example of the collaboration we now have between Metro and the city, Jim Desmond from your office actually sits in on one of our monthly meetings with my Parks Bureau to share a perspective, the Metro perspective, on what we're doing here. And that in essence is, on a very small scale, Intertwine. It's recognizing that we're all linked. So thanks to Jim and to Zeri for their leadership, for you and all of our partners. And I think Intertwine is a terrific idea, and I think Sockeye hit it out of the park in terms of the logo.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
All right. That is a presentation. So there is no council vote. We have another presentation. That is council calendar item 929. Could you please read the title?
Office of Human Relations and Community Members share their experiences as newcomers to the United States in recognition of the July 4th holiday.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. This is a treat for everybody. It's been my honor and privilege for the last 6 months and 7 days to be the commissioner in charge of the Office of Human Relations and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. And I've come to know a lot more of our citizens on a very personal level, and seeing the great work that we do in those, with both the staff and the citizens, and the programs that happen in those two bureaus. So in observance of the July 4th holiday, I'm pleased to present a jatung, which is Bahasa Indonesia, words for talking story. And Polo Ronald Catalani, who works in the Office of Human Relations, and three participants in Engage 09 and 08 are going to tell us, or going to give us that some stories. And I am delighted to introduce this. You can do yours first, and then we'll have our Engage participants come up. For those who are not familiar with the Engage program in both Engage 08 and 09, we in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and Human Relations help train leaders in communities, newcomer communities in Portland, help them come to City Hall. They get to sit in those seats right there and actually come and have a turn in our seats right here to experience that this is their City Hall as well as everybody else's City Hall, and that we want everybody to participate fully in citizenship in the United States. So without further ado, this is a jatung.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor Adams and commissioners. Thank you for welcoming us to our new home. It's Saturday. It's real early. It's time for citizenship class. Our parking lot's abuzz at Asian Family Center, sleepy grandkids dropping off ancient aunties under heavy winter coats inside thick wool scarves. Good morning, teacher. Good morning, teacher. They bow. They chatter like anxious macaque when leopards in the air. I lift my face, I straighten my spine, embarrassed I am by our elders' respectfulness. Lipo unlocks the upstairs door and the rush is like McKinley Elementary at 8 a.m., except slow, slow-mo like $6 million man pumping across Mojave. 22 minutes later, everyone's up those stairs, out their winter stuff, into their usual seats. Mrs. Sanchez gives her Saturday morning citizenship pep talk, same as last week. You can do it. You must. Polite's real important, she says. Say good morning, sir. Remain standing till Mr. Examiner invites you to sit. Answer always, no, sir. Yes, sir. Polite's big when you got no politics, and these elders got no punch. Social Security stops cold unless they pass the citizenship test. Okay, okay, I say, and they all look my way. 10 Viet grandmas, 2 Lao ones, and 1 smiling Mexican grandpa. We're level 1, the A team. Today, I say to them, we'll work on who. I write it real big, who. I pace up front, they go to work. Who's president, I say, who? President. Everyone drops their eyes while I stalk like you and me in algebra. Didn't do no homework, please don't call on me. They write, they try. We don't want them to write, though. We need them to listen, hear keywords. Most can't talk or read English anyway. I stop in front of Mr. Sanchez. Who's president, senor? Who? President. He knew last week. He did. He thinks hard. He says, George. Yeah, yahala, that's it, I say, and I dash to our whiteboard, and I write George. I add Bush, circle it with my miracle marker, George Bush, George Bush, and they chant with me, George Bush, and we're having such a great time chanting George Bush. When is harder? I know it. They know it. They squint. Killer concentration. Okay, okay. When Independence Day? When? Oh, I wish I could say Freedom Day. Everybody knows this word, freedom, translates easy, no political science necessary. But I know Mr. Examiner won't use Freedom Day. He'll insist on Independence Day. And even if I go down there, say, with tiny grandma, may her hold her trembly hands, I just make it worse. Like that time I went with sweet Mrs. Neary and Mr. Examiner read, if so required by your commander-in-chief, would you be willing to bear arms in defense of the nation? Bear? Oma Neary's lips moved. Arms? She knew bear like little sun bears back home. She knew bear, sure, like naked, like nude, like we won't say like decent ladies don't, not with menfolk around. And she knew arms, like how you dip into cool rice paddy water, like how you hold your baby tight, like how you cradle your soldier boy when he understands he's dying. She's a ma. These things she knows. And I was boiling mad, you barracuda bureaucrat. I was, but then I saw all that in Grandma's face, so I said, instead, through his interruptions, I said, Grandma, dear, listen. If America has a big, big fight, if Mr. Bush asks you to fight, Oma, will you? Will you go fight, Mrs. Neary, inshallah? Will you fight for America? Oh, yeah, two tiny fists, I fight. When is hard, I write it real big. When's Independence Day? I walk in front of grand old Madam Kim. She'll remember. She likes our Wen game. She's 75. She thinks a little slow, but she knows it's in her eyes. You just have to wait a second. Back home, 75 is not like 75 here. No Oregon water, no wintergreen toilet mints, no toilets, no one-a-days with calcium, no maternity leave, 12 babies, 4 wars. I should hand her my citizenship ticket. I lean lower, ask softer, when, madam, Independence Day, when? Her cloudy eyes rise, 4 July, she smiles. Thank you, and
that was beautiful.
A round of applause.
As New Portlanders, we are filled with ambition and optimism. We have energetic families, vigorous businesses, and I would like to introduce to you 3 new Portlanders. Dr. Bahar Bhuti, Iraqi psychiatrist. Jimit Dogo, director of the Africa House, a program of immigrant refugee community of Oregon, and the pastor Zam King, who single-handedly has been getting our newest newcomers, Karen tribal people from Burma, living since 1958 in rebel camps, fighting the government, suddenly showing up in far east end of Portland and doing his doggone best to keep his peoples, his families in order. I don't quite know how to proceed here. I think we should begin with my doctor friend because he takes care of me. Dr. Bahar's family just arrived from Jordan and from Syria. He's been here for about 2 years and his family for 2 months. So welcome to you.
Thank you, and thank you, Mayor and City Council. Paulo did introduce me, and I'm again, you're getting used to me, Bahar Bhuti, I'm a psychiatrist from Iraq. I came to the United States in Oregon directly in 2007. I was granted asylum, and my family, as Paulo said, joined me. Actually, now it's 3 months ago. Actually, I was invited in 2007, to make a presentation on the psychological consequences of war in Iraq by Dr. David Kinsey. He's the founder of the Intercultural Psychiatry Program at OHSU. This is a unique program in its cultural approach toward war trauma and refugee communities. It ended up by sponsoring me when he found out that I'm also a refugee myself and I had to flee out of Iraq to escape threats of killing. And I became a counselor in the same program. In reality, I was going through the healing process that Portland can provide to refugees. Oregon, I believe, provides an ideal environment for healing, people's wise and nature's wise. In 6 months, I was able to restore my human existence as a humanitarian activist. My first participation in public life was through the Community Gathering Center Planning Committee, that was a project of PDX Vision. And I can still remember the way I felt listening to the mayor talking about people making decisions about their own future. And how I said to myself, yes, if I had to leave my mother home, Portland has to be my new home. Eventually, I took the initiative with my colleagues who are refugees. There are two waves of refugees, Iraqi refugees, those who came in the 90s and those who came the last year. And we founded the Iraqi Society of Oregon. Last week, I was in a conference in Detroit. It was organized by the Lutheran Community Service on the issues of refugees. And I met Iraqi activists from other states. I can tell you that there is no community-organized response like the Iraqi Society of Oregon. It is the only, it's only Portland, Oregon, that provided such fertile ground through its healing environment, tolerance for diversity, and the essence of democracy that empower people to take responsibility. You know, Iraq is the land where the first alphabet was created in human civilization, and it is the land where Abraham was born. It became now the land of what I can describe as active engagement between East and West. So the Iraqi refugees who came to Portland carry with them this large and deep potential to create and build. And we also represent a sample of the Middle East as well. And here I am again in the same city hall after a year and a half. Now I'm a member in the Center for Intercultural Organizing and Vision into Action Coalition, and also Colored Pencils, which is a unique monthly festival for multi-ethnic culture and arts in Portland. And I'm here again participating in this presentation for the mayor and the city council, this time through the initiative of the Office of Refugees and Immigrants, and namely my sweet friends, Paulo and Nim. We want to share with you our vision of Portland in the 21st century, a space and model for moving human civilization into its new era as a small village. We are working towards social empowerment of our communities, and we like to call ourselves the newcomers to America. Of course, certain details need to be revisited later to achieve that empowerment. But on a deeper level, we are working toward bridging between all constituents of Portland to be able to share values and understanding of the meaning of justice, equality, and freedom. America was described as the new world hundreds of years ago. Now, the whole world is a new world. And Portland, Oregon has to be the place to create the new model that America and the human civilization need. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. As newcomers, we are Somali store owners, Mexican drywall hangers, and I assure you I've looked around our kitchen table, and I haven't found a single job stealer or pirate. In fact, I found a bunch of big-hearted people who just don't know how to stop working as hard as they do. And one of those big-hearted people is my colleague, Jim Itogo. You will find him at the other end of 911 calls in this community because folks still don't quite feel right about calling our 911, so they call him. But this is the biggest heart I know, a heart as big as Africa. Let me introduce to you Jim Itogo.
Thank you, Paulo. Bonjour, Monsieur le Maire. Bonjour, Monsieur le Commissionnaire. Salam. Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioner. My name is Jimmy Dogo. It's D-J-I-M-E-T, but they call me Jimmy. D-J-I-M-E-T because I was born on Friday, so it's the formation Arabic word, Juma. I came from Chad, Central Africa. I came 10 years ago from Chad, where the government of Chad threatened me for publishing a critical human rights abuse by the Chadian regime. I came through a 3 months in program, leadership program organized by United States Department, United States Department of State. I visited 6 states. And then I was invited by Oregon World Affairs Council in July 4th, 1999. I came to Portland and I gave a speech at Portland State University. While giving a speech at Portland State University, I met a Chadian, the only Chadian living in Oregon, especially here in Portland. So I was heading to New York to meet with a human rights group in New York. So he told me if you plan to live in the United States, come here in Poland. So I came back in Poland and applied for asylum. So I applied and received asylum. Then I was trying to bring my family. It took me 2.5 years until I met Senator Gordon Smith, who just made a phone call to American Embassy in Chad, where American Embassy in Chad went and picked up my wife and my two kids, crossed the bridge. Between Cameroon and Chad is like West Burnside and East Burnside, just a bridge. It took them 2.5 years to cross this bridge to other side of American Embassy. This is because of the help from Gordon Smith. Since 1999, I've been working with refugees, especially African refugees, to help them to be self-sufficient here in Poland. There are over 30,000 African refugees and immigrants here in our Poland metro area. Those Africans coming from 32 different African nations, they came here with diverse cultural background. We are the newest and fastest growing newly arriving community here in Poland. Those African family consider Poland their home now. We are not going anywhere. This is our home. Even though someone like me coming from desert, at first I was so shocked, how can people go to work when it's raining? But 10 years later, I learned that even if it's snowing, you can go to work. When I came, I was waiting for sun to come out before I wake up. Now I became a Polander that when a new refugee coming behaving like me, I tell them, you know, this is Poland, this is our city. Don't wait the sun to come up before you wake up, because there is no sun coming up until summer. So,
well, we're going to put you on our travel brochures. You're just selling us like, oh, wow, like nothing I've ever heard. Keep going, please.
So those Africans that are coming here, please know that they're hardworking, they're very patient and very persistent people. So given an opportunity, they will enrich, you know, Poland society, and they will become a very good and exemplary citizen. We are not, as I said earlier, we are not going anywhere. And this is our home now, so I encourage you to get to know us, to know your neighbor, and to know your constitution, because we are not going anywhere. So again, thank you so much. And also I want to say thank you to all my neighbors for listening to me. In our tradition in Africa, we said that when you die, the first question God will ask you, how is your relationship with your neighbor? So you have to be good and nice with your neighbor. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, all of you.
We have one more. Thank you.
Our final presenter is Pastor Zam King, and you can find Pastor King at the hospital almost any night waiting for folks because he's been asked to drive them there, and no one will interpret for them. They not feel safe with anyone except the community leader. This gentleman does driving lessons all week long, is running around looking for used PCs for his folks so they can get online and digital as quickly as possible, and he's really a local hometown hero. So our last speaker will be Pastor Zam.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's my privilege to be here, give my testimony to Mayor Sam Adam and all the commissioners. My name is King Mang Zam. I am originally from Burma. My ethnic group is called Zomi, and I have been here since 1994. I come over here as a student with my family, and because of the political unrest in Burma, I was able to get refuge here, and I'm grateful that Portland and the the United States government allowed me to refuge here with the safe nets. And I have my children raised up here, and they graduate from Portland, BSU, and Portland is a very nice place to raise family, and it's a good place to live and settle here. I would like to introduce one of the new ethics group that come from Burma. It's called Zomi, and the Zomi are one of the ethics group in Burma. We have in Burma about 135 ethics group, and Burmese is the official language. And I would like to give a little bit of background of Burma. Burma was independent in 1948 from the British rules, and from that on, all the ethics are also fighting for their own autonomy. And there is kind of a civil war for 50 years fighting right now, and especially the current ethics are the on the front, fighting for the military government. And I am, like I said before, I'm privileged to give my testimony here. Portland is a very nice place. We are welcome. I am happy that we belong here now after living 10 years, and it's become more and more a multicultural city in America. I never been out of the state many times, but that's what I hope for happening here. And one thing I would like to share is we are helping right now with together with Lutheran Family Service, the Catholic Service, and the SOARS, that new refugees that are coming, we are helping them, assist them, and we post some needs about finding a place for them and also their household items that they are needed. So we get a lot of donations. I feel that Portland, here in Portland, our neighborhoods are very concerned about the newcomers, and sometimes we have a lot of clothing and things like that that donated. It's more than what we expected. So I really are grateful for all the donors and all the people living here in Portland for your generosity and for your help and for your care for the newcomers. So that's why when people ask me that, why are you doing all these things? So I tell them that somebody has shown kindness to me that I am now able to show that my people to show them the kindness that was done to me. So like Polo has introduced me earlier, like every morning, not every, but sometime early in the morning, I get call for emergency, go to the emergency hospital and things like that. But whenever I go there, I get a lot of people that treat us very nice, very well. So I see that more and more the people are seeing us as a familiar face, not like what these strangers are doing here. I don't feel that we have been treated like the strangers. So once again, I would like to thanks to all the people that helping the refugees. And one more that I like to share is we have an organization called ARCO, and they have also organized every year they call Engage. Last year we have Engage 08, and this year we have Engage 09. And they train us, all the newcomers, to engage with the civil, to involve with neighborhood association, and then train us how to get involved with our neighborhood and be not be separate or isolated ourselves, I mean. So we will be become one of the neighborhoods that live, and we will be working together with the neighborhoods, and so we can be able to do whatever we can. One thing that the language barrier is a difficult thing, but there are a lot of people that a lot of experience, life experience, that they can help with the neighborhood and do whatever they can. And also we learn about the law enforcement, that sometimes we see the police car and the police officer, we are scared, but when we go to the training, we are more open to the police officers, and they are here. We see more and more that they are here to help us, not to be scared unless we are doing something wrong. So our people are now more understand about the cities, understand about the law enforcement personnel, that they are here to help us. Back home, is most of the time we see the police or the military people, we have to hide or run away. But here we see more and more that these people are for there to help us. And I would like to say that we have been organized ourselves in to become a vibrant community, actively involved with civil life, and we are working to better support ourselves with community development and building a network of support among organizations, churches, and civil institution, and neighborhoods, organization, and things like that. And also, we are working with other community. We have a same mutual interest, and regardless of their ethics background, or religion, or nationality. So we have organized ourselves with in Portland and in the state of Oregon. So we look forward to being active in the civil life, and we are grateful that many refugees from Burma can call Poland home, and Poland is becoming a more multicultural city. So please let us know that if we can input anything for the better of the Poland. And also, again, I'm very grateful that to our mayor and the city commissioners and all those in the authority, that they are helping for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, that was a presentation, and appreciate that, both presentations. That now gets us to the regular agenda. And the first item on the regular agenda is council calendar item 964, which is a regular ordinance. Could you please read the title?
Vacate a portion of Southeast 104th Avenue between Southeast Cherry Blossom Drive and Southeast Main Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mayor, members of City Council. Boy, I've been given a tough act to follow here today, but I'll try my best to be
street
inspiring as well.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm here today my name is Lance Lindahl with the Portland Bureau of Transportation Right-of-Way Acquisition, and I'm here today to talk about a street vacation at Southeast 104th Avenue between Cherry Blossom Drive and Southeast Main Street. This is a street vacation that was proposed by Portland Adventist Health, and it's to facilitate future development on their property out there.
Is there any opposition, any controversy to this request?
No substantial opposition to this one.
Okay. Questions from council?
Question.
Yeah, Commissioner Fritz?
I was looking at the conditions, and I noticed that in transportation's recommendation, they had a condition for a reservation of a public walkway easement, but then
That's
in the conditions
correct.
In the ordinance, it doesn't say public. Do we need to add the word public into the condition for the walkway easement?
I'll have Dee Walker, my supervisor, and this assist me. There's some language issues currently with public walkway easements, how we phrase them, either public walkway or walkway, but it will be reserved for public use.
Let me take a look at the ordinance real quick. I don't think it's necessary that it has to say public. I don't think it's a big enough issue to make a change in it because it will be set aside for public use. Where's your vacate ordinance?
just as long as it's clear that the legislative intent is that it be a public walkway easement.
Public walkway.
Yes, it definitely will be. So it's for connectivity between the two public streets.
Right.
So.
And it is also a requirement of the vacation that there be a 6-foot sidewalk built where currently it's just a parking lot.
Any other discussion from council? Is there anyone that wishes to testify on item 964?
No one signed up.
All right. Moves to a second reading next week.
Thank you. Thank you.
Carly, can you please read the title for emergency ordinance council calendar item 965?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office to provide inmate work crews to the City of Portland's Bureau of Transportation.
Good morning. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Whoops.
You could give us a quick overview of what we're considering here. This is an emergency ordinance.
Certainly. This is an ordinance that will allow us to continue an arrangement we've had with Multnomah County.
You state your name for the record.
I'm sorry. Suzanne Kahn, Transportation Maintenance.
Gary Halverson, Transportation Operations.
And so this is an ordinance that allows us to continue an arrangement we've had with Multnomah County for over 10 years and a little gap in our system that the new SAP system identified for us. We have contracted with them for that period of time to do some roadside maintenance for us, and it allows the inmates to meet their obligation for community service and allows us to extend street area landscape maintenance beyond what our crews would normally be able to do.
Anything you'd like to add?
No.
Okay, any questions or comments from council?
I have some questions.
Commissioner Fritz.
I'm wondering about the length of the agreement and 5 years and whether we might have other opportunities or needs over as the crisis continues with the economy as far as hiring either our own workers or youth crews with this money?
I'll let Gary talk about the length of the agreement, but let me respond to what our other opportunities might be. What we're proposing is $100,000 a year. That would buy us approximately one more employee with equipment and materials. That would take our street maintenance area landscape group from 5 to 6 people. We have over 800 sites through the city that we're responsible for, and we add more each year. These crews are able to get to somewhere between 150 to 200 sites. Primarily, the kinds of work they do would be in areas that really would not be suitable for youth, either because they're high traffic volume or they're very difficult, challenging work. For example, one of the things that the crews are doing today is they are working with the police bureau to clear the illegal homeless camps by South Waterfront. So you've got a lot of refuse, you've got needle disposal issues, those kinds of things that really would not work well for young people.
Can I also just note, because I think Commissioner Fritz makes a great point, but in the intergovernmental agreement that you furnished to us, in paragraph 4, it says that either party can terminate the agreement within 30 days' notice.
Right. So okay, that's helpful.
Your point, it can be terminated at an earlier date for any reason. And
that's part of our boilerplate contract.
Right, so very helpful.
That's true in almost every contract before the City Council.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. And then, so what are the benefits to the crew members for doing this work? Do they get trained on how to take care of some of these difficult things?
They do get some training. They actually